Hi, and welcome to the Creekwood Christian Church Sermon Podcast. This week, we continue our Lenten sermon series on the seven last sayings of Christ from the cross. This week, we'll be pondering what it means for us to hear Christ's commandment for the beloved disciple to accept Jesus' mother as his own.
Most of you know that I grew up in a rather large and a bit complicated of a family. When I was 11, I gained my first new siblings. I acquired a new stepbrother, a new stepsister, and an adopted sister. We had grown up together, but they were a few years older than me. We had all grown up in the same church. It was an okay transition because at least we all knew each other. We had grown up in the same place. We had been in the same children's choir and youth choir. Everyone was kind and everyone worked together, but we all brought our own baggage to the table when we came into being one family. One piece that would come, that would become a much larger piece of our puzzle, would happen later that year, because it was in that first year of our family changing, morphing into something new, that we had a bit of news that came forward. To take you back a little bit further before I get to that piece of news, my wonderful stepmother, whom I love dearly, Rona, had actually been married twice before my father. In her first marriage, she had borne my stepbrother and my stepsister. In her second marriage, she had two lovely stepsons, and she adopted Lisa, my sister. So it was in her second marriage that she had Sean and Nathan. One of ones that would become a larger part of our family was Sean. I also grew up with both of them, and he was a member of the church as well, and he was the eldest of us all. He was about 8 years older than me. He would stay with us on occasion, as he and Rona had been close. But on a specific Thanksgiving in 1997, he came to join us at the family dinner, and he also asked if he could live with us permanently. He was 20 years old, was attending the University of Houston, and had come out to his family that he was gay. It had been more than just news to his blood family, however. They had asked him to leave. They had said to go away, you are no longer welcome in this home. I remember when my dad and Rona sat me down and filled me in on the conversation. He was going to share my room with me, and I was thrilled. Sean was someone I loved and I adored, and I wanted to be just like him. He was the cool kid in our youth group, and I was like, I want to be him one day. I looked up to him, and so our family welcomed Sean, no questions asked. He was a part of our family. He was another brother. Blood or not, he was a part of the family. Well, in fact, most of us weren't blood anyway, so it didn't change much of anything. Family was meant to us far more than what blood that bonded us. Eventually, Sean's story grew and his family had a change of heart, but this would take years to happen. So as far as I've ever been concerned, Sean has always been and always will be a brother, whether we are technically related or not. Over the years, our family would morph. I would get new siblings from my mom's marriage. We would have friends who would come to live at our house at my dad's a number of times. It was crazy. We'd have bandmates of my brothers who would come and just stay with us for a month or two at a time. We had always 10 to 15 people living in our home. I had a new roommate every 3 months, it felt like. It was crazy, but we were family. If you stayed with us, it didn't matter your official titled relationship to the family. You were a part of the home, which meant you had chores, you had assignments, and you were going to eat chicken and rice on a regular occasion, because that was how you fed 15 people on a regular occasion. When I first encountered our story for today, this was the first thing that popped into my mind, because family can be complicated. Family cannot look like the typical family all the time. And often, many of us consider others who don't share our same bloodline to still be family as well. It can be from a long friendship that has endured for years, or a friend who walked through the other side of hell and back with you. Or it can be a family friend that you have known as an uncle or aunt, even though they never had that official title. You could have a friend you know as a sister or a brother. Family really is beyond blood. I imagine that Mary, Jesus, and his siblings, and the disciples all understood this concept as well. There were, of course, some hierarchical familial structures that are different from what we abide by in today's modern world. But nevertheless, Jesus isn't exactly born from Joseph, But Mary and Joseph would have at least a few other children, and the beloved disciple is spoken about in this scripture as the one who will take care of his mother Mary, rather than his own brothers such as James. We see a glimpse, perhaps, of something that points to a family that's beyond more than those that we are simply tied to through the bonds of blood. In these words, there is indeed more. But I would be remiss if I didn't give notice to the tragedy that befalls this family. Mary has had to watch something that is nearly unimaginable for most of us. I can't imagine the pain that had to have ripped at the heart of Mary. Watching her son arrested, put on trial, convicted, and now hanging upon a cross. In the midst of his own pain, we see Jesus also hurt for his mother. He sees his mother crying and hurting. He is gasping for each breath, and yet he sees his mother who has cared for him as a child. He sees the one who took care of scrapes and bruises, who comforted him on long nights, who sat with him as he grew up. As a child, he might have run home to her when the day had gone awry. Mary had seen him hurt before, but perhaps it always seemed like she could fix what had happened. Now, in this moment, there might have been a longing to offer some tender touch or care. But there is nothing that she can do but to look on with grief, unimaginable grief. It is in this moment that he reaches out and says, "Woman, behold your son." And looking over to his beloved disciple says, "Behold your mother." This tender moment is one that is not to be forgotten. Jesus did not choose the family that he would have, nor did Mary choose what her child would become. Though she was told before she even saw his face that he would be the Messiah, she couldn't probably have imagined that it would look like this or end like this. She might have imagined her son becoming a king or a leader. She had indeed watched him do things that no other person had ever done before. But this child of hers, this grown man who had been under her care, is now clinging onto life. This was their family. But they weren't alone. Others had gathered with them along the journey. These are the ones that had witnessed the love, the faith, the community that had performed miracles. This would be the community that Jesus would refer to as family in Matthew 12. He said, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" He looked to his disciples and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers." This was his chosen family. The experience of the beloved disciple and Mary is meaningful because it points to far more than the pain they are both experiencing. It points to a relationship that is needed. The beloved disciple and Mary are going to need each other. They may not be bound by blood, but he will take care of her as if though she is his own mother. And she will look after him as her own son. Communities are meant to be like this. We are not bound by blood, but we are bound to one another. Church is more than an event. It is more than just a gathering. It is more than just a place that we walk into for a funeral or a wedding or a Sunday morning service or any special service. If we are doing it right, this place is family. A few weeks ago, I had the chance to attend our Discover Creekwood dinner, where I got to hear stories that reminded me of what it means to be a church family. Family means you're safe, that you're seen, that you're heard, that you have a seat at the table. A few of our attendees got to share what brought them to Creekwood and how they have felt about their time with us, when it was truly a meaningful experience. Each one included a story of how they felt they didn't have to hide themselves or their children when they came into these doors. They were accepted for who they are fully, didn't have to change a thing about themselves or their families in order to be welcomed into a space where a God that we serve also sees them as whole, beautiful, wonderful, made in God's image. It made me think about when I first arrived at Creekwood as well, myself. Admittedly, I came hopeful, and, well, I was paid to be here. But I came with baggage as well. I came with fears. I came with doubts, wonders of what this would be like in this experience. But over the first few months, I was not just greeted, but was accepted as well. Even in those moments where I felt I was broken, I was seen whole and beautiful. To give you an example, about 6 to 8 months ago, I was doing a children's moment right down here, as Rebecca was doing for us a few moments ago. I had knelt down, and I was giving my thoughts on the day. I couldn't tell you what it was about that day, honestly, at all, because all I remember was that I was bending down, and in the middle of the children's sermon, a button went popped right off. I was mortified in that moment, and I don't think a single person had noticed, but I don't think I wrapped up that children's moment very well that day, because I went immediately to a let's pray, where in that moment where everybody's heads are bowed, I leaned over, grabbed that button, and put it into my pocket, hoping that no one would ever notice. I was so afraid that I was going to be seen, not just seen as a person, but seen as that chubby guy who got his button popped off. But that's not what any of you saw. Even if you would have seen it, you wouldn't have been someone who would have been like, well, Jonathan, oh, I need to work on that. You still saw me. You saw my humor. You saw someone who is beloved, and you saw me, as you still do. Wholly accepted, welcomed, and not judged. This is not always the case as we look to the world that is around us, constantly putting labels on us, constantly telling us what we are or what we are not, what we can or what we cannot be. But family, it's people who see each other, who root for each other, who are there with and for each other. It's people who sit with each other when those tough moments come. I sat with one of our teenagers just a few Sundays ago, and I watched them cry for 45 minutes. And within a few days, I got to celebrate with them in the joy of life that they had had a turnaround. I have watched countless times as you have all been family to each other, showing up in those important moments. You post about your gatherings about with each other, whether you meant to gather or not. You post about it when you happen to run into each other. I saw a post like a couple of months ago when someone said, hey, I was out to dinner, and then I had like 3 drinks with this person afterwards. Because you just saw each other and you celebrated that you were with one another. You brag on each other. You weep with each other. You show up. When Jesus spoke to the beloved disciple, he was speaking in one sense to care for his mother. It was his obligation as the eldest son to make sure she had a means to carry on after he was gone, as this was the structure of the time. But Jesus had brothers. Surely one of them would have taken her in. So what was this really about? Was this about Jesus looking after Mary? I think perhaps that Jesus is pointing out to the two of them and those who gather around that they're all going to need each other, because family is beyond blood. Family is far more than that. Through Jesus, we are all tied to one another in a unique bond. We recognize that the Spirit of God lives and breathes in each of us, and we look for the God that lives within each of us. It is a support system. We are bound to one another, not just when we walk through these doors, but beyond them. By joining together and gathering in the space, we are in agreement that Jesus is Lord, that God is love, and all are welcome to the table. The good news is family still argues. So it's not like we all have to sing Kumbaya every time we gather here in this space. But we can do so through love. We can remember that each person has a seat at the table. We support each other. We show up in those gritty moments when the world wants to rip us apart. We can create spaces here that are safe. We create spaces that are a haven for folks who are trying to get away from the world, who has told them that they are not good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, aren't fill-in-the-blank enough. You could like the wrong music, love the wrong person, or have a different way of seeing the world, uniquely who you are. But here, you are just you. Wonderfully, beautifully you. and we can walk together. Jesus can look to us from the table this day and admonish us, here is your mother, here is your brother, here is your father, here is your sister, here is your family. You're going to need each other, so don't be afraid. Share who you are, lean into one another. Love each other as I have loved you. May it be so.